This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm thrilled that you're here to spend the next hour with us. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide, you're going to transform your health and your life. We've got a great show for you today, so grab a pen and paper and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. Today, you're in for a real treat. My guest is Jennifer Fugo. Jennifer is a sought-after expert and advocate on the topic of healthy, gluten-free living. She's been featured on The Dr. Oz Show, as well as CNN, Yahoo News, eHow, and Philadelphia Magazine. Jennifer is truly the go-to person for almost anything gluten-related. She's the founder of the Gluten-Free School, and she teaches gluten-sensitive individuals simple, savvy, and empowering steps to get healthy. Living gluten-free since early 2008, after a gluten sensitivity diagnosis, she knows what it feels like to be overwhelmed by the cost and seemingly complicated aspects of going gluten-free. Jennifer is also the author of the best-selling book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank. I've been looking forward to this conversation and chatting with Jen, and I know she has a lot to share with all of you. So welcome, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Janelle. I'm really excited to be here, and I've been looking forward to this conversation as well.
I know we've known each other for a few years, and I've really been watching what you've done and learning so much from you. And I'd really love to start our conversation by having you just talk a little bit more about your background and how you became an advocate for gluten-free living.
So I got sick. Isn't that pretty much how everybody in the health and wellness industry lands where they do? I got sick back in, I want to say 2008, because that's when really this whole journey started. But I think, in all honesty, it was long before that. I'm not actually certain how long I was sick for. I had had chronic headaches. I was always taking Tylenol since I was in high school. And I always had tummy troubles. I think it was normal to have issues going to the bathroom. It just seemed like there was always a problem, and I could not get a handle on it. And it was like chronic diarrhea, really bad, very bad gas, horrible bloating. I would have some issues with constipation. And I say this, you know, I know some people, these are like subjects that people don't want to think about, but I do think it's important for people to realize what exactly digestive problems are. And I didn't know that any of that stuff was abnormal. I thought it was fine that in the middle of a meal at an Italian restaurant that I'd get totally sick to my stomach and have to run to the bathroom, or else we were going to have a big problem. And, you know, I think the breaking point for me was I couldn't wake up in the morning. I'd even sleep 11 hours, and I couldn't wake up. I had such incredible fatigue and felt like I was drugged. So finally, I ended up in a nutritionist's office, and she was looking at my diet and said, you know, hey, you eat an awful lot of bread products, bread and pasta. I know it's all organic, but it's still a large portion of your diet. And you also eat a lot of dairy, a lot of eggs, a lot of the same things all the time. But I'd love if you would try to take out just the wheat type stuff for 2-3 weeks. See how you feel. And, you know, then asked me what gluten was, and I'm from an Italian family. I had no idea what gluten was. This was like a huge shock to me. I'd never heard of it. And I said, all right, well, if you think it's really going to make me feel better, fine. Within 3 days of being gluten-free, I was in a different body. Like, I can't even explain to you, the gas, the bloating, the diarrhea were all gone. So much so that my husband noticed that something was different. My body literally had changed. And so I called her back and I said, you know, hey, I feel really great, except I'm getting these, like, very strange moments of still getting very sick to my stomach, and I can't explain it. There's no gluten in my diet. And that's when we did blood sensitivity testing through blood. And that's where the other ones showed up. So it was definitely gluten, the casein protein, which is found in all dairy, and then eggs. And I have several others, but those are the big ones. And those were the majority of my diet. It was really shocking. And so at that time, this wasn't a big topic. And I also had never heard of celiac disease. I wasn't certain what a food sensitivity was and thought it was sort of like a food allergy. I mean, there was a very large gray zone at the time. And so I taught myself over the next 8 weeks how to go gluten-free, how to do it without necessarily feeling restricted. And in the process, about a year later, I did end up with adrenal fatigue and candida, and that really opened my eyes to realizing that we should eat food that happens to be gluten-free. And I'm sure you and I can talk a lot more about that. But, you know, this is where I am now in realizing that, you know, women and men, especially, like, we need more information to help us navigate a very confusing landscape. Nutrition in general is confusing, but the information that's out there about gluten sensitivity, living gluten-free, and even celiac disease can be very confusing and contradictory at times, and it's been my mission to really help enlighten and empower people to make better choices for their health.
No, absolutely, I agree. And I know I've seen the picture of you before you started your kind of journey to eating healthier and then where you are today on your website. And I know it really is, for people that like a visual, it really shows a big difference between, you know, what that did to your body and your health.
Yeah, and it was a lot of inflammation. We think of inflammation and we talk. I'm sure in the wellness world, the word inflammation is thrown around like candy. You know, we use that word a lot, but a lot of people don't really understand what that means. And so when you look at my before picture, you can see how bloated and swollen my face and my neck were compared to my after picture. And inflammation could look like, you know, swelling when you break your arm, but can also be more insidious, like a silent, and that's really what that type of inflammation is. It's a silent inflammation that doesn't necessarily set off red flags or alarms, but it creates an issue in the body that's not happy, that's not good, and runs your system down. And so as long as those offending proteins, like in my case, it would be casein, eggs, and gluten, as long as they're in my system, that inflammation, like a fire, flares back up. But when you take them out, that dissipates, that inflammation goes away. And it's incredible to see, and really for me to have gone through these periods of time being gluten-free, gotten glutened, and then, you know, spending longer periods of time working on some other issues that I have, and just seeing how much, I mean, that's why I said I really don't know how long I was sick for, but my body is so much different than it was in 2008, and I'm so grateful that I happened down this path.
You said a couple things that I really want to just reinforce. I think so often we think the way we feel is normal. We don't know that we can feel any better or that there's anything different. And so much of the health challenges that we might feel aren't really obvious. You can't, it's not like if you break a bone or you something is on the outside of your body because it's going on, the inflammation, the different things that are going on the inside of our body. So it's really important to get people to stop and really pay attention to where you are and then be open to trying some different things like you were, which really then can help show you what's possible and show you and help you feel better.
Yeah, and I actually will point out, because I think it's important for me to say this, that my experience of, you know, like I said, that 3 days where I was gluten-free, all of a sudden it was a different world. That's not everyone's experience. There are people whose systems can become addicted to certain things that are produced in the body that are similar to morphine. So they literally are addicted to gluten. And especially, you'll hear this a lot from vegetarians who want to go vegan but can't give up cheese. It's the same type of effect. They're addicted to these morphine-like substances that make it so difficult to give up. So they actually will experience withdrawal symptoms for sometimes 2, 3, 4 weeks after going gluten-free. And it takes time for the body to reboot itself. But, you know, I think the one point that's really important to make too, as you were saying about learning how you feel and addressing how you feel, is that there is a lot of skepticism out there, especially with all these articles going around saying gluten sensitivity is fake and gluten intolerance isn't real. They are real. If you look at my before and after picture, they are real. If you read the comments on my Facebook page, they are real. These aren't people making things up. Simply because one person, like my husband, can eat gluten and have no reaction to it, and I do not have that same experience, doesn't mean that he can say to me, "You're making this up. It's in your head." It's really unfair because what we know about gluten sensitivity is so, in a sense, infantile. We're still figuring this stuff out. And the studies that have been used to say that gluten sensitivity or gluten intolerance, which are the same thing, by the way, intolerance and sensitivity are used interchangeably, those studies what they're using are really warped to benefit the author's opinion, to help his opinion that gluten sensitivity is not real, and that's not actually fair and not what the studies actually show. So, you know, another thing too I do want to point out is that gluten sensitivity or intolerance is much more than just a digestive problem. It can affect your skin. It can affect your brain. And I interview people every week. I have a podcast myself, and one of the greatest things that a brain researcher recently told me was that gluten sensitivity is largely a brain problem. It has major neurological impact that many of us don't even realize. So the foggy thinking, the exhaustion, the inability to stay on track and stay focused, to even having issues walking and motor skills. I mean, it has a major impact on people. And I just want to put that out there because I think there are some people who've seen these articles and said, oh, it must be a joke. It's not real. People are just saying this, and we're not. These are legitimate claims, and the science is really not there yet to decide what it is, how we determine if you have it, and how we go about helping it beyond just taking gluten out.
Well, you've really given us a lot to think about, and I'm excited about continuing the conversation. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to dig in a little bit deeper and really get people to understand what gluten is, how that they can identify it. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Most people know UPS, but did you know we offer expert advice and time-saving tools for startups?
I have a big idea, and now I have big decisions to make.
We can help you get there.
Startups need all the help we can get.
Talk with our experts and find technology that can help you automate tasks so you can do more, faster.
To grow, I need help saving time and money.
Have a one-on-one consultation with a specialist at no cost, and our shipping and tracking tools are free as well.
I want to be more efficient and streamline operations.
You can even sign up for UPS Smart Pickup, which will automatically notify a driver whenever you create a shipment online.
Wow, so I can spend more time focusing on the big picture?
You focus on your business while we take care of the logistics.
Putting more energy toward my dreams, that would be huge.
Get expert advice for your growing business. See how at ups.com/startups.
I love logistics.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley. Today we're talking with Jennifer Fugo, and we're talking about gluten and gluten intolerance and sensitivity, and Jen has so much to share with you. I want to start, one of the questions I like to ask all of my guests is about their big why. So Jen, what is your big why, and how has it motivated you to live a healthier life?
Well, I actually worked for my dad, who is a physician. He's an eye surgeon, and he treats people who predominantly have, oh my goodness, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, thyroid problems, you name it, on top of their eye issues. And it just shocked me how sick people are. And I can't tell you how many times, how many elderly folks, great, really wise men and women who all told me that the golden years are a joke, that is not, they shouldn't be called the golden years, that you really need to take care of yourself now to avoid this perpetual state of being sick all the time and going to doctors and taking pills and going to more doctor's visits and taking pills. And it began to get the wheels turning, that the way we go about things isn't working. So initially it was just to help improve the quality of longevity as I go through my life. You know, I would like to live a long life, but it's important to me that the length is good, that it's not, slumped over in a wheelchair and having people clean and feed me. I mean, I'd be very appreciative that someone would do that for me, certainly, but to really feel good, to have my mind, to be able to at the least enjoy my family and my friends, just to do something more than just sit and watch TV and feel sorry for myself, which is unfortunately the state that many elderly are in, and it's sad. It's just so sad, and it's almost wrong. And so that was my initial why. And then this whole thing with the gluten sensitivity came up. And you have to understand, when I went to the nutritionist's office, I had seen other doctors prior, and the doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. They did blood work, they did tests, and they said, we don't know, maybe you should stop going to the gym so much, maybe take some B vitamins. To me, being 27, 28 years old, you should not be so exhausted that even 11 hours of sleep at night isn't enough. That's ridiculous. I think that there is this sort of malaise that it's just expected that as you age, you are going to feel worse. It's not to say that I'm going to feel as I did when I'm 14, but I would like to wake up in the morning and feel good without needing tons of caffeine, and be able to go to the gym and play some sports and hang out with my friends and do things and be active and social. I mean, that takes energy. You know, being a parent, I see my sister who has a daughter, it takes so much energy to be a parent. You can't do that when you are totally strapped to the couch, feeling sick all the time with no energy to function. And so for me, it's about the better quality of health that I can provide my body, which ultimately is a gift. I can really take care of this gift. But I think, too, when I started gluten-free school and started acting as an advocate for others, I realized that what I do can be influential to others. and that I can help inspire others to do the same. And that, to me, is it started with the why, this very central, very selfish why. And there's nothing wrong with it being selfish, but it now has grown to something that is, it's more than me. And I really wish good health to everyone in the world. And if I can even just help one other person find that to feel inspired or empowered, then my mission has been accomplished. And I hope it's my hope that they'll pass that on as well.
I love that. And I know through our Eat Great, Live Well program, we teach people how to build a healthy relationship with food so they feel healthier. You know, Michael and I are in our late 50s, and we've got grandchildren, and we love keeping up with them and doing things with them. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying. Just because you're getting older doesn't mean that you still can't have your health and still do, you know, all those things that you want to do. So I love that. I want to just take a little bit of a switch and get you to explain what gluten is. You mentioned earlier there's a lot of press about it, both good and bad, but can you just explain what gluten is and how people can identify it when they're shopping, when they're reading labels? What should they be looking for?
Well, first, we have to know what gluten is, like you asked. So gluten is a protein that exists in certain grains. The most notable one is wheat. That's what pretty much everybody assumes is where gluten hides. And it is in wheat, but that's not the only thing that you have to look out for. So what I always tell my clients is to remember this acronym, BROWS, B-R-O-W-S. B is for barley. R is for rye. Oats are the O, except there's a little asterisk next to them, and I'll explain in a moment why. And then the W is wheat, and the S is for spelt. And spelt is a different type of wheat. It's an older form of wheat, but it's also gained a lot of popularity in the wellness world because people tend to react less to it if they are slightly gluten sensitive, but there still is gluten in there. Now, the reason I said there's an asterisk next to the O or oats is because oats inherently do not contain gluten. However, the regular oats, unless they are marked gluten-free, are processed and harvested on the same equipment as is used for wheat. They are often grown side by side in fields. Wheat is right next door. So as they're being harvested, that the particles that come across, so everything is contaminated. That's why we would say oats are cross-contaminated with gluten. I even know people who have tested oats, like Quaker oats, for example, for gluten, and they are not gluten-free. These are simple at-home gluten tests you can actually buy, and they do work. So if you do buy oats, you have to make sure that they are marked gluten-free. Now, as of last August, the FDA finally defined gluten-free as meaning that a product would contain 20 parts per million or less of gluten. Now, there is some debate about whether people can be reactive to gluten under that amount, but regardless of that statement, that is what the FDA ruling means. So any product as of, I believe it's either this July or August, but sometime this summer, any products that include the label free of gluten, gluten-free, and I'm not sure what a few of the other ones are. It might be no gluten. And I can certainly give you the link to where the FDA recommendations are if you want to post that up for your listeners. But basically, gluten-free and free of gluten mean that the product must be under 20 parts per million. The little caveat here is that these companies do not need to certify their products. There are certifications out there. So if you see a circle label, and it'll say, there's several of them, but it'll say something like certified gluten-free, that means those companies have gone through a specific process, and they are certifying that their batches that come off the lines are gluten-free. Other companies that just put the label gluten-free on their product, they should test them, but that doesn't mean that they do. And until so many people get sick and file complaints with the FDA. Only then will the FDA look into things. So I would say if you do need to be gluten-free for sure, it's best to look for certified products or companies that specifically are using good practices, such as keeping their lines separate, so that the line that, say, your some granola bar that you buy is produced on, that line is for gluten-free products only. They do not make other products with wheat. So if you see a label on the back of the packaging that says that this product was made on a shared equipment with, say, wheat, obviously, you know that there's probably a good chance that there could be trace amounts of gluten in there, not making it safe for those, especially with celiac disease, which is the autoimmune version of gluten sensitivity. So that's really the first step, and that's what I would suggest that people really look out for, because otherwise you can get into trouble if you just go, well, there's no label on it, but I don't see gluten in the ingredients list, because guess what? A cereal that's labeled wheat-free doesn't mean it's gluten-free, because, and I've seen this a lot with cereals, they'll use barley malt as a sweetener, but there's gluten in barley. So wheat-free does not mean gluten-free. It's very important to also note that any derivatives of wheat or barley, rye, whatever, that are not gluten-free are also adding gluten to a product. And that makes it very challenging for folks to go out and look at an ingredients label and say, oh, well, there's no wheat in this. Now, you should know if there is any wheat in a product, they have to, by law, label that. It'll say this product may contain wheat, just as they would with nuts or shellfish or any of the other 8 major allergens. But barley is not on that list. Rye is not on that list. So again, it just behooves the consumer to look for a product that is gluten-free. And if you're really not certain, I kid you not, I do this all the time. I'm walking through the grocery store, look on the back of the can or the box, and I will call the company and ask if they can give me a definitive answer. And they're like, yeah, we don't label, but we definitely are gluten-free. We are really sensitive to this topic. That, yes, great. But if the company cannot give you a definitive answer and they're wishy-washy, I will not buy their products.
Wow, you've really given us a lot of information, and you actually just solved a mystery for us. Michael is gluten sensitive, and he just said the other day, sometimes when he eats certain cereals, and he's very careful to buy the cereals that, you know, don't have gluten in them, but there's still some that he still is having a reaction to. So it's probably because they've gotten some cross-contamination because they're not certified gluten-free. So there's something in one of the ingredients or something that has still probably got some gluten or gluten exposure in it. So
exactly.
Very, very,
and it may be processed. It may be processed on the same line as another company's cereal that has gluten in it. And they're really, I'll be honest with you, I don't think the companies can really clean their equipment that well, especially depending on what machines they're using. So I really, especially if they're going to tell me that a shared equipment product is gluten-free, I expect you to test that, not just to assume that it's safe. And just to let folks know, too, another little bit tidbit about labeling is that if it does say made in a shared facility as wheat, that does not necessarily mean that a product is cross-contaminated. Most products are made in a shared facility. The shared equipment and shared facility claims are not mandatory, according to the FDA. Those are things that the company does, I guess, in a sense, to help protect themselves, but to just let you know. But especially if the product is certified gluten-free, they make sure that, like, the air currents moving throughout the facility are not going to draw wheat from one stored batch of ingredients into another that need to be gluten-free. So as long as you really do due diligence, if you're really uncertain, obviously don't eat it, but call the company. A lot of times they can help you. And most companies really don't want people to get sick, because obviously that would be a big problem for them.
No, yeah, absolutely. You've shared some great information. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk about your book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper and How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank, and continue this discussion. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. Our annual International Conference and Business Expo is on August 7th through the 10th, and we not only have a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders, but this year you will be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only, conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, interacting, and sharing with other conference members. This will be an educational, inspirational, motivational, and transformational experience. Oh, yeah. And we have the best party in town on Saturday night. Dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas, Walton Stout. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details on how you can be part of this life-changing experience. Everybody,
come on. This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Jennifer Fugo, and we're having a great conversation about gluten and living gluten-free. Before the break, we were talking about how to tell if there's gluten in a food, and we'll make sure that Jen referenced a couple of resources, and we'll make sure that we add that on our website at Eat Great, Live Well Radio, so you can have access to that. But, Jen, I'd like to ask you, a lot of people say that gluten-free food or eating gluten-free just really doesn't good or it couldn't possibly taste good. So what's been your experience about eating gluten-free or eating foods that are labeled gluten-free?
I think it spans the gamut of tastes horrible to tastes awesome, just as any food would. You know, I think there's so many cultures in this world that eat naturally gluten-free food that to say that gluten-free food is tasteless is ridiculous. So I'm Italian. I already shared that with everybody. And one of the things that I found was that Italians, and when I say Italians, I don't mean Italian-American, because obviously we have changed the flavor palettes and the way that we, how much pasta we eat, for example. We've changed that, the food, the culture, the food culture of Italy when it's brought here. But when you go back to Italy, first of all, Italy is one of the most gluten-free friendly places you can go, believe it or not. They're very aware of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease, and it's very easy to eat over there. The pasta capital of the world, it's easy to eat gluten-free there. And there are so many things that are naturally gluten-free. So a lot of food products, it depends. It's hit or miss. It depends on how many binders they've had to add to products. You know, it's just I cannot say with all certainty that anything marked gluten-free is going to taste good, because that is not that is not all true. My husband and I have taste tested many products. I get sent a lot of things. We have one granola downstairs from a very, very big company in the gluten-free market, and it is awful. It is like the worst granola I've ever had in my life. My husband, who's not gluten-free, couldn't even eat it. I couldn't eat it. It's just bad. So, but here's the thing, like I could go to the grocery store and pick any, you know, quote unquote normal product and have the same reaction. I will admit that when I started this whole journey, the gluten-free products that were out there were not so good. The bread was really bad. It's gotten better, but I don't eat a whole lot of it anymore. I might have bread, I think the last time I had gluten-free bread was back in March, so that was four months ago. But you know, there are so many foods out there that are naturally gluten-free. So as I said, when you eat gluten, you're looking at those BROW, the acronym BROWs, right? Mm-hmm. However, you could go into the grocery store, you could go into the produce aisle, and pretty much anything there is gluten-free. Fruits, vegetables, meat, fish, nuts, seeds, eggs. You know, if you eat dairy products, there's so many things, all these different fats and such. Like, you can make incredible meals. You look at the, for example, I mean, we're not talking about paleo today. We're talking about gluten. But if you look at the paleo explosion in this country and popularity, those folks are not eating, you know, these like really sad meals. They are eating decadent meals. So to say that gluten-free is tasteless, what I would recommend for someone, if people are having that reaction, is number one, you should go take cooking classes. First and foremost, that's how I learned how to cook. I took cooking classes, and I started challenging myself every single week to learn new recipes. The second thing I will tell you is that when you focus on foods that happen to be gluten-free, you're much better off. People will not miss what's not supposed to be missing. And I've catered parties, birthday parties for like 40 people, none of whom are gluten-free except for yours truly. I do not cook anything with gluten because that's too much of a risk for me to have to handle. So everything I made was gluten-free. Not a single person said, where's the gluten? People were asking me for recipes left and right. And I have to tell everybody, I'm not a gourmet cook. I did not go to culinary school. I taught myself. Trial and error. That's all. Just playing around and having fun and getting to know food in its natural state. And it doesn't involve having 15 or 20 ingredients just to one recipe. It's like, how could we do it in 5 ingredients or less? So that's what I would invite people to retune their thinking about food, to eat in a way that happens to be gluten-free. You know, I never also to apologize for the food that I'm going to put on the table. I'm proud of every single thing that I serve, my family, my friends. When I taught cooking classes, I just had the pleasure of teaching a class at Williams-Sonoma. And people, I'll give you an example, I made pan brown chicken thighs, and all it was chicken thighs, salt, and pepper. And you would think to yourself, wow, that kind of must be bland. You know, it's just those three ingredients. The chicken was gone in no time. People were asking me for the recipe. How did you do this? What did you use oil? What did you put on this? It tastes so good. I said, no. The natural fat from the chicken thighs renders. It makes the chicken skin really crispy, and it keeps the meat very moist. It has an excellent flavor, and the salt and the pepper just add a little something to it. It's an excellent dish, and it's literally one main ingredient and two spices that anyone has in their kitchen. So it is not that food doesn't taste good, it's that we have to start exploring new foods, trying new things, and become open to simple flavorings and spicings and fresh ingredients that will improve the quality of the food that we make in our kitchens.
Absolutely, and it's often how you fix it. My father-in-law was here a few months ago, and we served Brussels sprouts and some other types of vegetables. And when we told my sister-in-law what he ate, she said, no, you must be, he doesn't eat those foods. And after we had the conversation, it came down to the fact that it was the way we fixed them. He loved mm-hmm. him. He had multiple helpings of him. So it really is how you fix the foods and keeping it simple, but bringing out the flavor of the healthy foods. And what you said about not telling people, you know, what's not in it or that it's gluten-free, because it's really about what it is. It's about what you're serving, not what you're not serving. I think we give a title to it and that people go into it with a certain, just a certain preconceived idea of what it's going to taste like or what it's going to be, and it's not.
And it's not fair. It's not fair to the food. You know, they don't give the food a chance for what it is. Rather, they allow a label that really, at the end of the day, unless you're gluten sensitive or have celiac disease, or say you ethically don't eat animals or whatever the reason is that you need to eat a certain way, and if none of those reasons exist for you, it really doesn't matter whether the dish is gluten-free or dairy-free or egg-free or vegan or whatever. It really doesn't matter. So why give someone ammo ahead of time to be skeptical of a dish when there's no need to be?
No, I absolutely agree. You know, I want to ask you a question. One of the things I read, I started reading your book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank. And one of the things that really caught my attention, which I think is an issue today, there were a number of things, but one of them was that just because the label says gluten-free doesn't mean that it's healthy. I think a lot of people say, because it's gluten-free, I can eat more, or I don't have to, you know, I don't have to worry about what else is in it. And could you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, so as I said before, I had gotten sick. I ended up with adrenal fatigue and candida about a year, almost exactly a year after going gluten-free. And the reason was literally because I thought, well, these brownies say they're gluten-free, or these cookies say they're gluten-free, so they must be good for me. Right? Oh, I was in for a rude awakening when my body was just like, no, we cannot handle this. We cannot sustain what you're doing to us. And here's the bottom line. Treats are still treats. And I really believe that treats are also not good snacks. And when we use any types of excuses to eat junk food just because it's labeled a certain way, you know, we have to look at our relationship with food. So that was one issue that I had. And for gluten-free products, FYI, everybody, the flours, I get, like, you might go, well, it's rice flour, it's brown rice flour, or it's made from chickpeas, and those are good for me. That does not mean that gluten-free cupcake is good for you in any way, shape, or form. Those are all highly refined flours. And it doesn't matter whether it's brown rice flour or white rice flour. That still has one of the highest glycemic indexes of any food out there. So a lot of gluten-free food, aside from the additional sugar that they add to products, and aside from a lot of the, like, really rancid, awful fats and oils that they add to those products as well, in addition to their awful binders that, you know, they may be adding whey or egg, pieces of egg, like egg whites, or even like xanthan gum and other binders, they're really not good for you. They are very high glycemic treats, even worse, unfortunately, than their wheat-filled counterparts. So to fill your life, you know, that's why I believe that your first month of being gluten-free, if you just need to replace products, that's okay. I understand. We'll all understand. But after about a month, you've got to say, okay, well, I've got to get more greens on my plate. I've got to start eating more vegetables. Maybe instead of the pasta, I'll have a half a sweet potato. Or maybe instead of, I don't know, the pizza, I'm going to have some sort of like brown rice salad, you know, and slowly start adding in more nutrient-dense foods. That way your diet is filled with quality and quality nutrition rather than empty calories. It just, in essence, got turned to sugar.
That's a great reminder about, you know, watching what you're eating and really understanding the labels. And a lot of what we teach when we teach people how to build a healthy relationship with food, what we're going to do is we're going to take just a real quick break. And when we come back, I want to have you share some more tips on how to eat healthy without breaking the bank. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we've been talking to Jennifer Fugo, the author of The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank. And I want to continue our conversation that we were having before the break and ask you, Jen, if you would share some more tips about how to eat gluten-free on a budget.
The products you're buying on average, are about 2.5% or 2.5 times, more expensive. But I've seen bags of pasta that are easily 4 to 5 times more expensive than their wheat-based counterparts. So that's just an average. So in essence, this advice that I'll share is going to apply to anybody because it's really universal, but I think it's important for folks in the gluten-free space because we are obviously dealing with a substantial increase in cost to do this diet. So the first thing I would recommend to people is that you've got to meal plan. I know it's not sexy, but you have to do it. It doesn't mean like, oh, I just get a couple ideas and I jot them down. I literally suggest to people, and I do this myself, on Saturday, I plot out what we're going to have for the entire week. I'll ask my husband, what do you want to have this week? Is there any particular, oddball items that I don't make all the time that you would love to have? That way, my husband, and, maybe too, like if you guys have your grandkids are coming over on a certain day, then you can ask them, like check in with them, like, hey, kids, what do you guys want to have? And that way people are happy. They don't feel like they're eating the same things all the time, and we do see meals that we really enjoy pop up on the menu. And from there, you're going to create your shopping list and then shop around that at the grocery store. And the reason that this is so important is that grocery stores are set up to get us to spend way more money than we would normally want to. It's why grocery carts are enormous, because if you put a few things in them, it looks like you didn't buy enough, and you go back and buy more. And the grocery store, too, is really playing us. They know that we don't know that a lot of the shelf space is paid for. So things at eye level, those companies paid to have that placement on a shelf. The companies paid to have end caps of their products placed there. Because you think it's a deal because it's placed on an end cap. That was intentional. Not all two-for-one sales are really a deal. You really have to look and see if what you're getting is worth what they're saying it is. And a lot of times it's not. So one thing that I will do as far as nutrient density, I do go by the Dirty Dozen list. Organic, buying all organic is out of my price range, as it is for a lot of people, unfortunately. But, I can certainly share this link as well, and I hope we will, is the Dirty Dozen food list, which is a great resource for people to decide if they want to spend more money on things like peaches and strawberries and apples and bell peppers that are higher in pesticide than, say, sweet potatoes or onions, things like that, avocados, bananas. So I'll buy things that are lower in pesticide count at a produce store. So, they have Mexican or Italian or, Asian-themed produce stands that sell produce at a reduced price, more in bulk. And that way you can spend more money at the grocery store on foods that are, you know, say organic, or maybe you go to the farmer's market and you have then more money to spend at a local farmer who might not have an organic certification but does farm organically. The other tip I will give you about a farmer's market is that a lot of times if you go at the end, farmers will have to get rid of whatever produce they bought and they will dramatically mark it down just to get it to go. So I've bought huge boxes of tomatoes and lettuce and strawberries and things like that they just needed to get rid of for like $5. So that's the one thing that you want to know right off the bat. And the thing is, too, if you have a grocery list, now all of a sudden you can look at the circulars because the first page, maybe to the page and a half, first page and a half, will be produce-based. So there you can look for different sales on, say, asparagus, or you could get avocados for $1 a piece as opposed to sometimes they're $2.50 a piece. Then think about where you can get some of your produce, things that you might not necessarily need to eat fresh, like peas, green beans. I'll even buy strips of pepper that are all chopped up, which, by the way, are a lot less expensive in the freezer aisle than they are fresh. There's nothing wrong with frozen foods. Obviously, it's not going to taste the same, but if you're making them or adding them into soups and stews and other dishes, you're not going to notice that they weren't fresh to begin with. And frozen food is really good for you. It's been frozen at the height of its freshness, and it's been able to retain that nutrition. So you can go and get a bag of peas or a bag of green beans for $1 as opposed to like $2.59 for a bag of green beans that are fresh. You know, the greatest thing to do is to just grow them yourself, and they're very easy, but not everybody has that inclination. I do have a garden, and I suggest to people to even just do like herbs. That's a great way to save money, but if you can't, you know, this is another great way. I'll also share too that in the meat aisle, you'll look for the sales on meats that are at the end of their shelf life, like a day or so before, the grocery store will mark them down about 50%, buy them all up, put them in your freezer. You will have, you know, you could have grass. I buy grass-fed meats a lot of times that way, or the organic line of chicken that my grocery store sells at 50% off because I got it the day before it, quote-unquote, expired. So that's a great way to do that. And in my book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, I do have charts to tell people how long things can stay in your freezer. And, you know, the other thing I will share, because I think it's important for people to know, is that some weeks I don't really have to go grocery shopping. I might spend $40 between myself and my husband to get some, like, key staples that I just have to pick up. Because, like I said, if I get all my meat on sale, you know, a month ago, and I've got my freezer, which is just a little square above my refrigerator, by the way. I do not have a large freezer. You know, I have the basis for everything, and I get frozen vegetables when they're on sale. So everything is stockpiled and ready to go and easy to make. And I have been able to demonstrate that these tips, which are not that hard and actually not that time-consuming, believe it or not, can actually help someone who, say, is on a really tight budget, even on food stamps. Because I was required to do a project for a course that I was taking, and my nutrition teacher, who was a dietitian, was shocked, surprisingly shocked, at how nutrient-dense that I was able to make a diet for a woman my age on a very, very low income level for the SNAP or food stamp program.
You've given us some great tips. Just before we finish, you mentioned twice in the last couple of minutes, just so people understand, you talked about nutrient dense. So can you just briefly explain what that is so people know how they can use that when they're shopping?
Yeah, so nutrient density is how much nutrition is in something that you eat. So if you go to eat a donut, it's pretty much all carbs. It's white, starchy, high glycemic carbs. You might say, oh, there's strawberry filling in there. That's still sugar, right? So that's very low nutrient density. A lot of microwaved meals, they have very low nutrient density, especially if you see that things have been fortified. That implies that they've been processed so much that nutrient density has been lost and needed to be replaced. So when I say nutrient density, we want to look for the highest amount of nutrition that can possibly exist in something you're eating, and that exists when you eat real food. like an avocado or strawberries or romaine lettuce, squash, any type of thing like that, grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, nuts, seeds, things that are real, something that you could go and harvest or a farmer would harvest for you, those are the most nutrient-dense foods out there. They are real foods, and they have the most nutrients in them, so you get the most bang for your buck.
That's great, and that really should help people as they're shopping. You've given us so much great information today and so many things to think about. Can you tell our listeners how they can get more information on you, your book, and gluten in general?
Yes. So everyone, I invite you to come back to my website. It's glutenfreeschool.com. My book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank, which is an Amazon bestseller, is available through Amazon. You can either search my name or just The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper. It'll pop up. It's also on the front page of my website. And I do have a newsletter that goes out weekly, and I offer recipes, informative articles, podcasts. I just do a lot of stuff to get the information that you're looking for into your hands. And when you do sign up for my newsletter, I have an 18-recipe meal plan that I'm more than happy to share with you that you'll get once you sign up automatically to be able to download and use immediately. And, you know, that's the same then with the book. There are 27 recipes in here, and there's an interactive guide to show you visually, step-by-step, how to meal plan and examples of how to do all of this stuff. I mean, I have so many tips in here, it's kind of crazy, but all of this can really help make your life better. And then in September, I'm actually launching the first Women's Gluten-Free Health Summit, which is going to be online and accessible to anybody in the world. And you guys will definitely have a link to that in I'm sure, the show notes as well that you'll be able to sign up for. It's free and accessible to all women. And we have about 20 speakers that are just phenomenal that you will love sharing some incredible information.
Perfect. As we finish our conversation, I'd love to have each of our guests share one action item, one tip that our listeners can implement in the next week to start eating healthier and creating that healthy future for themselves and those they love. So what tip would you share with them?
Buy a new spice every single week, even if you don't know what it is, and then go on Google if you're not sure, and Google it and see what you can do with it. And before no time, you will have an amazing spice and herbs too. So I don't want to just say it's just spices, but herbs and spice to really help bring out the flavor in your food. Google is a great place to go to learn how to do that. You know, if you're on Facebook, ask your friends and family. Somebody may know. And, you know, start with what you're comfortable with. Maybe ask people what are their top 10 favorite spices and start with those and experiment, have fun, and you'll find that that whole stigma about how you eat and it doesn't taste good will soon no longer exist because you're getting in these incredible flavor enhancers that will make your food taste awesome, regardless of what label is on it.
I love that. I love that. And I want to thank you so much for your time today, Jen. And I feel like we just scratched the surface. So I hope that we can get you back to continue this conversation in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Janelle. I really appreciate it. And I wish everyone listening the best of luck. I hope they have a fabulous day and that at least some part of the information that we've shared will, you know, touch their lives and they'll immediately start to be able to make changes the moment we're done.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for listening to us and joining us for the last hour. Until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create that healthy future for yourselves and your family. And be sure to visit us on Facebook at Eat Great, Live Well, and share your favorite spice or herb that you're trying. Let us know what questions you have so we can make sure we get them answered. Be sure to join us next week and each week as we work together to build a healthy relationship with food together. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.